Okay, guys, welcome to the TDC Connected meeting for May. Once again, just a real quick reminder, if you ever miss this meeting or any part of any other meetings, they're posted to the TDC Connected website under Meeting Recordings. I think we're up to 25 or 26 meetings recorded on there. I add a kind of a highlighted title to each one of the recordings so you know what that recording talks about, and there's just a really great wealth of knowledge there from all of our past meetings. So please, if at any time maybe you come into a meeting late or you miss kind of the end of a meeting for whatever reason, go in and listen to those meetings when you have some time. Maybe you're in your shop doing some repair and kind of get it going in the background and you can listen in. So today's meeting, basically the content was recommended by Dave Reinhardt, and he knew that we basically started to offer more and more services here, as we always do as new things come out and Bud gets different repair procedures nailed down. And sometimes we're not always the best at letting you know what those new repair procedures are. So Dave Reinhardt recommended that we kind of go through some of that new stuff and maybe have Bud lead us through some of that repair and the descriptions. And then hopefully you guys have even brought some questions about some different items that you've run into, and Bud can hopefully help you out with some answers to your questions on those. So Bud will be kind of leading us through some of the new repair procedures that he's made available and that he can do here for you, and stuff that he can probably walk you through at home as well. So it's going to be good having Bud lead us through that. Now, just to give you a quick FYI, if you do want to unmute your line, guys, so you can chat with Bud and ask him a question or two, simply hit *6 on your phone. That'll unmute your line. You can ask any questions or add any input. And then when you're done, we just ask that you hit *6 again to kind of remute your line so we don't hear any of that background noise. And I'll go ahead and give that same instruction here in about 15 minutes just for any possible late arrivers. So don't think I'm repeating myself for your benefit. It'll be for the benefit of those that join the meeting late. So, Bud, go ahead and hit *6 on your line, because I know I muted you as well when I muted everyone else. And you can kind of
good morning, everybody.
Yourself. So there's Bud. They're probably not going to answer you, Bud, because they're muted, but what I did for them, Bud, is I emailed out a 2014 new repair capabilities sheet.
Okay.
They may not have had time to print that up, but they can do so when they get home if they're out, or they can do it at a later time. But would you go ahead and just, you know, kind of start taking us through some of the new repair procedures that you offer and I guess explain a little bit about them?
Sure. A couple of the new items that we have available now is we're able to do the 196 and 200 line cords along with the 700 and 701, 702 units, which it's becoming very common for the line cord from the control box down to the motor to fail for one reason or another. Most commonly, the doctor complains about a code. Instead of having the power displayed on the little digital display on the front of the unit, it'll actually have an E or an error code along with a number. The number will kind of give you we have a little cheat sheet here that we've kind of developed as far as what is wrong with the unit. And most cases we're finding that the line cords are going bad, either from being stepped on numerous times, dropped. I've found a lot of units that the cords have been pulled out of the back of the unit. So one of the things we can do now in-house, or again, as Dave said, we can probably walk you through the majority of these repairs. Your costs on the cords are running anywhere from $195 to $295, depending on which one it is. And the recommended retails are $595, so there's plenty of room for, you know, a nice little profit margin there. Let's see. Now, basically, when you get the line cord, it's a pretty easy repair. There's four screws on the bottom of the unit. There's two screws that will release the faceplate. And as you can see, those of you that have had an opportunity to look at your email, there's only about six wires that need to be hooked up. And we've created, again, another cheat sheet, because the aftermarket wiring diagram is not the same as the factory original. As far as the motors, I think for the most part, any of you who are seeing the electric motors are either sending them in to us currently or you're able to overhaul them. The new 700 and 701, 702 units, It's a brushless setup, so there's less to repair or to replace. Basically, with those, it's two bearing replacement and a light bulb. There's not a whole lot to these units.
What are some of the major problems that you experience with these control boxes, these KAVO control boxes, bud?
For the most part, what we're seeing is water clogs, and that could be that the tube has been stepped on or stretched. It's amazing how it appears that so many of these units are being yanked on. I don't know if the control boxes are mounted to a fixed surface, but the tubes are really, it shows signs of being heavily tugged on. And, you know, there's only six little wires and three pieces of hose running through this unit that keeps it attached. Very commonly, like I was saying, the water control block could be, or the water control valve could be blocked, or the tubes are just so stretched out that as you stretch the tube gets smaller and is creating a blockage. So in some cases, I've found that you can actually shorten a tube, or the most common error code that I find on these going through them is error code 4. That's a short in the wiring system somewhere in the cord, but by replacing the cord, that fixes all the problems, basically.
What kind of, how much time would you say you would need to invest to replace a cord on one of these electric torque units?
It's about a half an hour.
Okay.
From start to finish.
That's not too bad. That's probably quicker than a lot of true torques and shorties out there.
Definitely. Uh-huh.
And a real quick reminder, guys, if you have any questions on what Bud's talking about or something that he's covered, simply hit *6 on your keypad and ask away.
Okay. The next item that we've recently purchased a 200 XDR unit. For the most part, the head assembly, this 200 XDR is a motor assembly and basically a 25 LPA combined into one unit now. So you'll find that the turbine cartridge, the back cap, everything on the top, the head side of it, is all identical to the 25 LPA. In the past, we've been able to go through and do bearing replacements and everything. We were kind of sending them out untested, which 99% success rate. We did find one that the stator went bad. But what we're able to do now is test the unit 100%. At this point, I don't have cords available for the 200 XDRs. But the top assembly, like I say, I would say 95% of what we've seen so far is just the turbine cartridge, whether it be bearings, and the repair is done identical to a 25 LPA. Cartridge bearings, or it may need a cartridge, which is universal to the 25 LPA. And the drive shaft is a different drive shaft, different part number, but the bearing assembly is the same. And again, we do have a testing unit that we haven't had in the past.
And actually, some guys, Bud, have sent in XDRs that they've repaired, and they've just sent them in and said, hey, you know, put this on your unit and test it. I'm pretty sure it's good to go, but, you know, you've got a good customer, an important customer, and you just don't want to send it back to the customer without testing it. I know Scott Marks in Michigan sent me, I think he sent me two of them now, that he's overhauled or one of his guys has overhauled. They did a great job on it. They both worked well, but he just wanted that extra sense of confidence. He had something coming in anyway. So we tested that for him, gave him the seal of approval, and sent it back to him with his parts order. So you're more than welcome to do that without, you know, soaking up some sort of a repair charge. If you go ahead and repair the drive shaft and the head in-house and then just want us to test it, we're more than happy to do that for you guys.
And one reason I would recommend sending it in, too, or testing it on a unit, is if you find that the pull test holds well and it seems that the bearing spins nice and smooth, you can't find an actual real problem with it. For the most part, when I get them in, the burr wobbles around or it doesn't hold a burr, the button sticks. If there's an obvious problem, I feel pretty confident when we were sending them back that we fixed the problem. I've found a couple of them that we ended up having to send in to Shine for a KAVO factory repair that we found that those were stator problems. So if you don't see anything, I would recommend sending it in for us to test, if nothing else.
Hey, Bud, this is Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Do you tell us about the control box itself on the 200 XDR. You said you don't have the cords yet. Should we be, if we have a dock that has a problem, should we be sending them to you?
Well, we don't have a cord available as a replacement cord, but as far as our testing unit, we bought a complete system. So we bought it with the contrangle and everything. So if for some reason you send in a box that you thought may have a cord problem or something further, I can do a 100% test on this unit now, whether it be the handpiece or the control boxes.
Okay. And let's say it's the control box, then what?
Dave, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to let Dave know that we have sent those in, and I think I've sent two in now, and one of them came back. It was about a $425 repair, factory repair. The other one was a little bit more extensive, and it was about an $800 factory repair. Now, remember, you automatically can add anywhere between 33 and 50% on top of that to retail to the dock. So you've still got some pretty good margin in there because that $400 repair probably retailed for close to $600 to the dock. So it's still worth doing. The only issue that anybody has ever had with that, in fact, one of them came back pretty quickly. The one that was the $800 repair, it was like a 5-week turnaround time. So unfortunately, it wasn't a super quick repair, but they did get it done. I think the franchise owner retailed it to the dock for like $1,100, you know, and the guy paid it. So, you know, it's half of retail on the thing. So the guy figured, well, it's probably worth it since he probably got a new brand new cord and motor section for that repair charge. But yeah, I've sent two in so far, Dave.
Okay.
And those were the repair prices that came back to us.
And one of the things I've found very common on all the stuff across the board, whether it be the 196 and 200 unit, which was the old brush type, the 700, 701, and 702s are brushless, and then the new 200 XDR, very common. Each one of those, I've had a lot of problems with water. Again, it could be as simple as cutting a little piece of the hose off, or the way that Kevo designs their control board, as you can see if you've had an opportunity to open the email, there's a little electronically controlled water valve assembly that gets clogged up. It's an aluminum block that gets it kind of a hard water buildup, I guess you would say, that a lot of times you can go through and kind of scrape it away and clean it up. Or worst case, in some cases I've been able to bypass it, that the doctors had numerous problems along, you know, with the water control system. No matter what we do, it keeps clogging up time after time. I've gone through and tried to create a little bit of a barrier with a thin film of grease on it. So in that case, I have bypassed it. I've talked to the guys over at Shine, and they've done it as kind of their factory repair also. So it's not approved by Kevo, but it works well, and it should eliminate any problem that you may have in the future, because that water control valve is about $250 from Kevo at the wholesale price. Does anybody have any questions? All right. Well,
just on the water. What I found is that with the water goes into the contra angle,
mm-hmm.
there's a little plastic filter there.
Yes.
That you can, if you're careful, you can screw that out, and you can clean that, and that sometimes also helps.
That's something, Irwin, we do on every LPA repair that we do here. We do pull the filter out and clean that out, because that is a very common problem. And even if it's not a problem today, it's going to be a problem in the future, because it's rare I've found any of those that don't have any debris built up in the filter already. So even if it's currently flowing water, at some point it's going to get clogged. So I do my best to make that last through the warranty along with the bearings.
Thank you.
This is Harv. I have a question.
Yeah, Harv.
Regarding the wires in the control box that come from the cord, are they soldered in place or are they screwed on to terminals?
No, they're not. If you've had an opportunity to look at that picture, there's a little green block with orange little prongs. It's kind of a cool way that they designed that. They've tinned the wires. Okay, you push down on the little orange dot and slide the wire into the hole, so there's no soldering required at all.
Wow. And then the other question is on the XDR model. I'm very unfamiliar with electrics. The motor is actually the part on the end of the cord, right?
No, now that is actually in the base of the contra-angle. If you'll notice that, if you've seen
it
in 200 XDR, the 200 XDR is a little bit longer than an LPA.
Okay.
And what they've done is taken the motor, shortened the motor up, and eliminated the idler out of an LPA and made the 200 XDR slightly longer than an LPA, but it now incorporates the motor along with it.
Okay. That answers my questions. Thanks.
Great.
Hey, Harv.
Yes.
Just one thing I noticed, because I've just in the last couple of days have been doing some stuff on these. If you take a look in your Shine catalog where they have the 200 XDR, there's actually a really good cutaway that will actually show you where the motor is in that thing.
Okay. I'll take a look. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. You're right. That's on page, I was looking at it right here, page 467 on your guys' 2013 Shine catalog, and it's on a different page if you have, depending on whether or not you have the 2012, it's going to be on page 449. But very good point, Dave.
All right, if there's no other questions on that, the next item I'd kind of like to talk about is the ATC OEM backcaps. Midwest has released that the ATC 890 and 990 series handpieces, the electric high speeds. A lot of guys have been having problems, or I've noticed a few handpieces coming through here, that the doctor, I believe, is removing tissue with the back cap, and I've actually received a couple of these with holes in the back cap where the button is actually worn all the way through. Well, at this point, we haven't had back caps available, so we've kind of changed up the way that we've done it and used the OEM Midwest Stylus back cap for the high speed and changed the rear bearing configuration and everything. It changed the entire turbine assembly, the stack up. It wasn't a standard go-to piece. One thing we do have now available is those caps are available from the factory, and they're universal between the 890 and 990 back caps.
Has anybody out there run into that problem where they have that ATC back cap and it's literally getting a hole worn right through the middle of the center? I know the one that Bud is talking about, we've received several from one of Bo Smith's customers down in the Fort Worth area. And literally you get that back cap in and there is a hole worn through the back cap. It looks like an impact air back cap for all of you that are familiar with the OEM impact air back caps. And they've worn that hole into and then even through the back cap, which just seems crazy because the heat that it generates would certainly burn a patient, you would think. But so anyway, if you do run into that problem, at least now we have the OEM cap.
I've also seen a handful of those caps come in with, it almost looks like a weld mark in the center of the button to where it, in a short period of time, it is going to eat all the way through. But at that time, you just see it's a little dark spot right in the middle. Let's see. Our next item that we have for the Star Blasonic Scaler, we've now got the back-end inserts. As far as where the base of the rubber grommet is crimped into place, those have been a little bit of a problem in the past or more recent repairs. If any of you have seen the new Blasonic Scalers, for the most part, we don't use any tooling other than an adjustable wrench to take it apart. Everything unscrews. There's no more press fits with the tooling kit. But it's very common for these to be so corroded that you're unable to recrimp the new rubber grommet into place. And then we also have for the Blasonic Scaler also, the rubber noses come in. I've seen a lot of them torn or real bad discoloration. We've got the rubber nose replacement tip, rubber replacement tips available.
Most of those that we've seen, Bud, have just, they're just flat missing. Like, we'll get in those Blasonic scalers, and that rubber grip is just missing off of the whole
The majority of them
the
are missing.
Scaler. Yeah. And in addition, I think that trick that Paul Nims just performed yesterday was pretty cool. As far as that water line went, Bud?
Right.
Do you want to explain that one real quick?
The base went on the four-hole back end on that unit, for those of you who are familiar with it, unscrews out of the what are we calling this?
That base piece?
Yeah, the back end or the base insert. The water line screws into it, and what the doctor was complaining about is that the water line was broken off. Well, come to find out, it wasn't broken off. The water line was pushed up further into the unit. So what we recommended was to heat up the base where the water line comes through, and Paul was actually able to slide the water line down through. What had happened is it had been pushed up, and he didn't have to buy anything new and was able to get it right back to the doctor. The doctor was in a hurry and worked out well.
And then, does anybody have any more questions for Bud on some of those new repair procedures or anything out there that you've run into that you'd like to see repair procedures on that maybe you haven't seen yet? Maybe it's something that we have developed or just missed on this conference call or this email. Please go ahead and, let us know. Go ahead.
I have one question for Bud. But the Stylus ATC, as I understand, that's a standard stylus from like midway up and a different back end.
Yes.
Does that take a separate control unit? And if so, do you have that?
We don't have it available. What we're doing, Dave, is if you guys can get a hold of an old Midwest XGT or a regular Midwest stylus, what we're doing is switching it over to the older style back end so you can use your Midwest coupler and run the handpiece as a pneumatic handpiece.
Okay.
So
when they call in for the tech support, you can almost snap a cable coupler into place and it will allow the turbine to run. But everybody's first impression is there's no torque. The porting is just enough, close enough to being that so it will run the handpiece, but not enough to where you're going to get the torque out of it. So what we found is, and it should be easy enough to find an older XGT or a stylus, because most commonly when a doctor junks a handpiece, it's because the head is so badly damaged. It's rare that there's ever a problem with the back end. And just by switching that over, the front half, like you were saying, is all pneumatic. The base that connects down to the air unit, or with that one, it's the electric unit. So the connection is different.
So for those guys out there that may have missed that, the Stylus ATC, you can't just hook up to a regular coupler. It's got to be a specific coupler that comes with the ATC electric / pneumatic power unit, we'll call it. So what we've done here to repair those Stylus ATCs, to test them, is we've unscrewed the back half of the ATC off, and then you can actually screw a regular air-driven stylus back end or bottom half onto the ATC and then just test it on a standard Midwest coupler. And then once you do the testing, then you just simply put the original ATC bottom half back on the handpiece and then send it to the customer. Sorry to be redundant, guys. I don't know if everyone caught that or not.
Dave, I'm having a bit of problem visualizing that. I was wondering whether you could ask Bud to take some photographs and of that whole situation and put it on a diagram like you sent us here. Me personally, it's easier to visualize if I can see it like that.
Absolutely, I can, for sure. I'm writing that
Thank
down
you.
Now.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Do we have any instructions for a cable 20E, the counter angle, that's all one part, the head and the body are all together, the intramatic 20E?
Well, you know what, Raymond, I'll check on that. I believe we do. I will double check.
If we could, I haven't seen it in my books, but I would love it if somebody could send it.
Okay, let me take a look. I think I actually got a hold of a Cavo factory print on that one.
And we do have the tool that unscrews that drive shaft, correct, Bud?
We do. Uh huh.
101 to 10E or something like that. 20.
Yeah, I've got the tool. I just could use some help on the actual disassembly.
Okay. I will check into that. I believe I have it.
Cool.
This is Jack, Dave.
Yeah.
Talking about stylus and ATCs, I have a doctor who's looking for some. If anybody has one or two, they'd like to get some of them they'd like to get rid of. Along that same question, is our handpieces, are they available with a Midwest coupler back in on them or just a Cavo?
They are only available with the Cavo Multiflex coupler back in, Jack. If you are looking for one that fits, just a regular handpiece that fits on a Midwest style coupler, I know it's more of an economy style handpiece, but the Dentex folks make one that fit on a Midwest coupler, and the folks over at MK Dent do as well. So I can order those for you. So there are some options available there for that Midwest / B&R coupler.
Okay. I appreciate that. But if anybody's got a stylist or one of the ATCs or something out there that'd like to move along, I would certainly appreciate a connection. Thank you.
One question, I'll just throw this out at you guys. Mike B. In Minnesota emailed me a question. He's having a little bit under the weather, so his voice isn't working, he said. But he wanted to know, if any of you guys had your own autoclaves for the questionable hand pieces that come in, that he's not sure they've been sterilized properly or not. So if anyone does have an autoclave and uses it, let us know. I can tell you guys and also Mike at the same time that the FDA requires all these docs to autoclave every single piece of equipment that goes out for repair. So that means everything from all the little instruments and scalar tips, the sharpening and retipping stuff that a lot of you guys do, those all have to be autoclaved prior to them sending them out, and same with the hand pieces. So they are, in fact, required by the FDA to sterilize those units. So even if you do get them and they're dirty and they're gooky and they got debris on them, they according to the FDA regulations, those should have been sterilized by the offices before you guys get them. In fact, most of you get your hand pieces in a sterilization pouch, I imagine. So just wanted to give you guys a quick heads up on that. But, yeah, Mike B. was wondering if anybody had their own autoclave, because he's probably fearful on some of the ones he gets, and they just look nasty. So he's just trying to take a little extra precaution there. I don't know. I'll say this to Mike, if you're listening. I know you sent me this email, so I imagine you are. I haven't heard of anyone that had their own autoclave that did this stuff, but maybe there is one or two guys out there that do. I'm personally not aware of it.
I'm Mike Koff. This is Mike. With the auto, I get a lot in that are in autoclave bags, but it doesn't appear as if they were autoclaved.
Like the little blue dot or whatever, the brown mark hasn't changed color?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you ever call them up and ask them?
No, I haven't.
I wonder.
It's possible I'm the way I am right now simply because of that. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But a lot of people here in Minnesota are sick with this flu or bug right now, so.
Right.
I've got doctors who don't autoclave between patients. They just autoclave once a week.
Wow. That's scary. I'm sure they lose a lot of their customer base if their customers knew that.
Yep.
Is there a place where we can get the FDA requirement that we can put in with our information so that we're telling them that this is a requirement?
I'm sure there is. Probably like just the FDA sterilization procedures is kind of a guide or whatever that they may have released.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Bye.
I'll look that up for certain.
All
Let's see here. For sure.
You can go to the FDA. Sorry, this is Erwin. You can go to the FDA website, and you can also go to the American Dental Association website. They've all got, I think, what you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm looking that up. I'll look that up for sure.
Hey, well, you're looking that up, Dave. I've got one, well, actually two more items that I wanted to throw out real
quick.
Yeah,
go for it, bud. Your floor's open for you for sure.
On the Profi 3 units, the Star Profi handpieces, we've now got the rubber tips available for those, but also the nose assemblies. Again, we've seen a lot of those come in with the rubber piece missing, but I've seen a lot of them come in. We've sold more of the nose assemblies. The entire nose was missing. Doctors are losing them. Somebody's throwing them away. I don't know if that piece is getting sterilized by itself and lost, but we've seen a lot of those missing lately, and that is a part that's now available. So either the rubber tip or the rubber grip and the nose assembly. So if anybody's looking for those, that is a new part that's available.
Cool.
Hey,
anybody
Bud?
Yeah.
Bud, this is Bailey.
What's going on?
I got a question for you, just to revisit an old subject on surgical handpieces. Has any thought been given to, being able to overhaul things like the Hall Surgair, Surgitomes and stuff like that, or do you still just send it out?
You know, right now, Bailey, I have gone through a couple of them. The problem is if it's anything beyond bearings, I have gone through a couple of them just to see what was there, what we can do. If anything is needed beyond bearings, I've got to send it out anyways.
Okay.
Out of the two that I have taken apart, one of them I did send back, and, after putting bearings into it, we haven't had a problem with it at all. That's been probably over a year ago. But the other one, if I remember right, like the impeller, if I remember right, I made a little hand-drawn schematic of it.
Uh-huh.
But if I remember right, that was like an impeller or something that was bad, and I can't get parts. So we are kind of limited by parts. I'm not seeing a whole lot of those. I haven't seen a whole lot of those over the years. So I don't know if you're seeing a lot of them.
Well, there's a bunch of them out there. And when I call on old surgeon offices, they either have one of two things. They either have the Hall Surgitomes, or they've got Striker Core or Command, electric handpieces.
Uh-huh.
And... I'm seeing the repair orders coming back from the folks at Triton, and I'll be honest with you. I mean, on the PM contract that they have, they're just replacing bearings. Anything beyond replacing bearings is going to be an upcharge. And I'm just wondering if maybe that's something that we could at least try to do in-house some of that and recoup that cost.
Well, Bailey, on those, you definitely need to be charging your doctor accordingly. I know that, if a doc sends it out to, Shine or whoever, I was talking to Dave Reinhart, they quoted him like $950 or $1,000 a piece. So this isn't something you're trying to go out there and do a $179 overhaul on.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, right now, not
3,000 plus dollar units, and you'll get repair costs back on those that might be, $300 and something, and you should be doubling your money on that without having to lift a finger, which is kind of nice.
Well, I'm not able to double my money just because there are other people that are doing it, and the market pressure is driving the cost or the price down. And I'm making money on it. That's not a problem. It's just I feel like a lot of the money that I could be keeping in my pocket is going into Triton's pocket. And I don't mind paying them for the work they do, but if there's something that I could be doing in terms of like the mid-year preventive maintenance portion of it, because in the service contract you have the first initial overhaul and then you have a mid-year, just they go in and replace bearings, and that's pretty much it.
Well, that's what we can do as well, or you guys can do. So, and Dale Giddings, and I know he sold his franchise to Raven Young down there in San Antonio, but he used to do the bearing overhauls on those surgical units, and I know he did it quite frequently. I know Bud's done it a couple of times here. He said one of the times it was just, unfortunately, there were some component parts that weren't available to him, so he couldn't properly do the repair. But as far as just on an overhaul basis, I'll get some information out to you and the other guys. So if it is just the common, just the bearing overhaul, Bailey, maybe we'll have a set of instructions and some bearing and the number of the bearing that you need to do the repair.
That sounds good. I mean, I've got a couple offices that and they're not interested in the service contract at all, and they still have these older models, Surgitomes, and, my competitors here in the area can do that. So, that'd be fantastic if we can get the schematics on
it. You got it, Bailey. We'll do.
Is it just the hulls, or do you have some stuff on the Command 2s as well?
The only thing I have right now, Bailey, is the hulls.
Okay.
But, I mean, if I run across one, I can take one apart and, kind of draw a picture up and see what we can put together. Because, like I was telling you, the only thing I have right now is kind of a hand-drawn picture that I think works well. I mean, when I draw those up, I really try to make a point to show which way the step goes on a spacer or whatever. So when you stack everything up, it should go back together just as the picture.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Bud. All right, guys, any other questions?
I've got a thought that came. In slow speeds, when I open slow speeds, they are rusted, and I have to use heat and everything to get them apart, and you have to replace everything on the inside. But I'm just wondering whether it is advantageous to tell or to use our normal spray lube, maybe once a week or once a month, to spray through a slow speed so that any oil or any of the drops that have been put in there and haven't been blown out and now turning into black oil on the inside can get blown out and cleaned out, and then follow that with maybe one or two drops of oil. Has anybody ever thought of that? That would keep the inside of the motors clean. They wouldn't get that black oil that comes out that I seem to be getting on the inside there all the time.
Absolutely.
Has anybody got a thought?
Well, I don't know. But do you have thoughts on that?
I don't know. I see where Irwin's going with it. My concern is if it's a motor that hasn't been recently repaired, you're going to have a buildup of debris, and by spraying a cleaner into it, you're going to break stuff loose. As far as debris, you might be clogging the motor up, which I guess if you haven't repaired it for a while, it'd be a good thing that you're going to get in and get it cleaned up. But I think spraying too much of the cleaner in it or too often, you might create more problems than you're fixing.
I know Dale's cheat sheet for the training class that he did with all of the customers here in San Antonio, he's like a one-page summary sheet that he did for all the doctors as part of the training class, that was included as standard maintenance for the slow speed, was that it was once a week that they should be sprayed and then blown through.
I like that. I think it's a good idea, Raven. Obviously, Dale did, and it must have worked.
I think he got it from
doing that for nine years.
They had a tech in Vegas who had a lot of knowledge about the slow speed motors. His dad was like one of the ones who patented
it. Yeah, Mike Kapp, I think his name was. Yep.
And he's the one who put together this cheat sheet for Dale on the maintenance and the all of the high speed stuff, the same as what's in the other presentation. But yeah, on the slow speed, it does specifically call out doing that once a week.
Yeah, and that's a good source, too, because that guy's dad actually started Micromotors all the Micromotors product that you guys run into and may be familiar with. It used to be in the Shine catalog as a standard items. They're slow-speed motors and heads and attachments. But, yeah, so he's got first-hand knowledge for sure, Raven.
Hi, David Horv. I have a comment regarding that.
Yes, sir.
What I've recommended to a customer as an experiment, and and I've tried it a few times with slow speeds myself, is when I get them in the shop, of course, they have the non-swivel coupler on them, and so I will put that adapter on my spray can, and I'm trying to figure out how to describe this over the phone, I will put the adapter up to the port, kind of turned sideways at about 180 degrees. So, in other words, the only port that is engaging the handpiece is the air inlet and the spray outlet of the can, so that when you spray the can, the spray cleaner can circulate completely through the motor. So it will spray back out the exhaust port of the motor. Because if you just put the coupler or the adapter on the can squarely, tightly onto the motor, that spray cannot go anywhere because it can't come out through the port. So you're pushing the dirt that's in there. You're trying to force it out through the bearings on each end of the motor and forcing the dirt into the bearings instead of out of the motor. So if you put that adapter on so it goes only onto the inlet port.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
Granted, you've got all this gook spraying out at your hand when you're doing it, but you can spray quite a bit of dirt back out of the handpiece without forcing it through the bearings and then running it. I think if that was done routinely, like once a month or something, on a handpiece that's not really dirty, it would go a long ways in maintaining the motor cleanliness inside the handpiece.
Okay.
Great tip, Harv.
If that makes any
sense.
Think
about that, how that thing blocks up the air exhaust. So of course.
Yeah, so it can come out, and it tries to force all the dirt out through the bearings on each end of the motor, and you're not really flushing it out.
Okay, excellent. That's a wonderful suggestion. Wow, I didn't think of that. I'm slipping.
Just had a thought on that, Harv. You could take a standard 4 or 5 hole adapter and just drill a hole in the side of it into the exhaust tube.
Yeah, you could make some modified adapter that would do that more conveniently. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking, you could wrap a paper towel around it, so when you give it a shot, it's going to come out through the hole you drill and go into the paper towel.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So I've actually included that procedure in some of my maintenance presentations.
Excellent.
I have a question on the surge air tome quickly. What about an adapter for testing, a coupler?
Well, the surge air tomes, you actually can take it has a single port air intake, which I believe is that they're actually powered by nitrogen, I believe.
I believe so.
Because of the surgical issues, and you don't want embolism in the bloodstream, or the air in the bloodstream. So, but you can run them on air. And what we've done here in the past is, you simply take from your air compressor, because your air compressor is probably going to be powered at 80 plus pounds, I would imagine. The surge air tomes run at about 100, so you can take your air nozzle from your air compressor, make sure you got it jacked up to, 80 to 90 pounds or so, and then you can actually, if you've got the little rubber grommet that a lot of these air compressors come with on their hose, you can seal on that little air inlet hole and run the surge air tome. You can actually run it. So you don't even need an adapter. You just need the air hose from your air compressor. So they can be run. All right, guys. Well, any other questions for Bud?
Hey, David.
Yes.
It's Alex. I just want you to know I'm here. I came on a little late. I was an appointment.
Okay, well, one of the things I mentioned to the other guys, and you probably knew this as well, I do post these TDC conference calls to the TDC Connected website, usually the same day that we hold our meeting.
Yeah.
It's the first half of this thing. You can go on there later today and just click on the audio recording and listen to that half, Alex.
I certainly will. Thank you. I appreciate
okay,
that.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I'll mute myself, and I'm still here.
Okay. Anything else for Bud, guys, while we got him? Okay. Well, if not, I think we'll wrap this meeting up. It was another good one. We appreciate all of the comments and the questions from Mike B. and Irwin and Bailey and everyone else. Dave, thanks for the suggestion. And say thanks to Bud for kind of enlightening us on some of those repairs. I hope you guys all have a great day, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Take care.